Hey everybody, welcome to Roger and Me, aka Roger Ebert and Me, a Siskel and Ebert tribute movie review podcast in which we endeavor to review all the movies that come out every Friday, every week. My name is Brett Arnold, at Brett Redacted on Twitter.com. I am here with my co-host, Mark Dusick, aka Mark Reviews on Twitter.com, and famously of MarkReviewsMovies.com, where he's been reviewing movies since 2001. On his website, in print, you can read it all on MarkReviewsMovies.com. In typical fashion, is this a week where we're in complete synchronicity? Where
is it? Oh, in terms of like opinions?
In terms of you and I seeing the same number of movies, I feel Oh, God damn it.
I'm sorry.
How many more do you have? I feel like they're not up
we're
yet.
Doing
we're recording
four,
a little
early. I have only two. I only have two more.
What? It's not a two more. What is it? What are they?
The Daniel Levy Good Grief movie on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then a racing movie about rally racing that doesn't quite explain rally racing or the people behind it. So you didn't miss out much.
Right on. I'm glad I did not know those existed before I recorded this episode. We have four movies for this, the first week of 2024. Welcome to the new year, another year of Roger Ebert and me. I crunched the numbers earlier, and by that I mean I scrolled down our page all the way to the January of 2023 and then scrolled all the way back up while counting. It took a while. According to my amateurish count, which could be off by, a couple, we reviewed 394 movies in 2023. If there were a Guinness Book of World Records for most movies reviewed on a podcast in a single year, new releases, very much asked all those things. If that's a thing, we've got it for sure. Somebody please submit us. Thank you guys for listening. I want to do another call out for reviews. We really appreciate seeing them. I called for specifically UK-based reviews, and we got a single one more, which was awesome to see.
But it was very kind. Thank you so much. That was generous.
It was great. Notice. There's thank also you. Another American-based great review that I want to say thank you to. Your username was a bunch of gibberish, which I appreciate. I think that means that you jumped over from YouTube and made an account so you could review us. That's what I like to think anyway, because I am doing a call for you YouTube viewers. Hello to you. Get on Apple Podcasts, get on Spotify, give us some ratings. It really helps us get surfaced on Apple Podcasts in the app and whatnot. You guys know what this podcast is. We're just keeping the Siskel and Ebert model alive of reviewing all the movies every week like they were wont to do. Mark's got a nice new microphone setup that sounds wonderful. So hopefully that sounds good. If it sounds bad, let us know.
Microphone, please do, because I will fix up the microphone. I realized that my headset microphone was crap and decided, I've been doing this for more than a year. Maybe it's time to actually get some equipment for recording.
I also agree that this wasn't real until we hit the year mark, because who knows? It's hard to commit to something and actually see it through. I have given up on many projects in my life, so it's really cool that we were able to sustain, what was it, 51 weeks of new releases and then another week of recapping those new releases. So, not to toot our own horn too much, but it's been a pleasure to do the show. Happy to keep doing it. Hopefully you'll see more from me in the future in terms of writing stuff. I wrote blurbs for these movies that are out this Friday. I don't know where they're going to publish yet. I think I know, but I don't know if this first few batches may publish on my own or somewhere else. We'll see. But for now, let's talk about the one major wide release, the major studio release, the first major studio release of 2024. It's a Blumhouse horror movie, which is now Blumhouse has now merged with Atomic Monster, James Wan's production company. So this is like the first Blumhouse dash Atomic Monster label on a movie. It's called Night Swim, and it's based on a 3-minute short. Here is the trailer for Night Swim, the length of which probably is about equal to that short.
It needs a little work, but I don't think it's going to last long at this price.
There's a pool.
Always wanted a pool.
Is this everything?
We'll grow into it.
Y'all ready? Marco.
Hello. Marco.
Hello.
Marco. I hear you. You need to say something back.
You get it. That's kind of the vibe. What else? That's kind of the problem with this movie, Mark.
That's the big problem with the movie. You get it.
From what the trailer else? Alone. What else can you do when your premise is haunted swimming pool? There's only so far you can go with it. There's like someone can be in it and be in peril, and that's really all you got. And then the peril can only be in the form of being drowned, obviously. And the way this movie does it, just kind of have generic ghostly figures kind of near the pool haunting it. This movie is like a crude mashup of a lot of horror movies. The ones that come to mind, namely, are Amityville Horror, The Shining, you know, your typical
any haunted Poltergeist house movie.
It's
in the backyard.
It's ripping off that. And at some point, Mark, I was like, this movie has a lot of imagery that is like evoking other horror movies that I've seen. And then it starts like ripping scenes wholesale, I will say. I felt like the scene in the pool grate, is just the scene with Georgie in It that we've seen in two movies now, if you ever watched the TV movie. And then we saw the big, you know, the 2017, whatever it was, Andy Muschietti, It, another iconic scene. If you've read the book, it's an iconic scene. So nothing in this movie is original, including, surprisingly, the premise, because despite the originality, quote unquote, of the haunted pool, which you probably haven't seen this specific version of before, the story it ends up telling is one we've seen before. So we just got out of the pool, Mark. You and I just saw this movie. We're toweling off. It's fresh in our minds. What did you make of it?
I mean, the opening scene kind of, the opening scene gives away everything the movie's going to do, number one. And number two, it just really puts into focus that the filmmakers only have that template. There is a template for horror movies that has been around for like 20 years or so, where you have the opening scare sequence, where you have all these other scenes that happen. You have the real estate agent who's like, oh, I didn't want to tell you about the girl who died, but I guess now that you bought the house, I might as well tell you. Weird things are happening. That's straight out of like every single haunted house movie eventually at some point. The scene where one of the characters travels, well, first looks up everything online, discovers the secret horror that's been happening at the house the whole time, then travels to go talk to somebody who knows firsthand about the horror and confirm all the suspicions. All that's like out of a template, and it's just plugging in the concept of a haunted pool into that formula.
Which I will say almost inspired the backstory they managed to wring out of like the pool. And like why pool is the haunted thing. It's almost inspired,
almost,
but it's actually really dumb.
It's silly. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. And it's not, and it doesn't recognize it. That's the weird thing about it is this thing is so dumb on its face and it doesn't recognize it. It could have had some fun. The whole scene with the Marco Polo thing, that's kind of funny because what else, why not come up with other things that you do in a pool? And kind of play on that idea. I don't want to think of it. That's not my job. My job isn't to tell the filmmakers what to do. But something like that, where you have this sort of ordinary thing that happens in a pool. There's a scene with a pool party. They play chicken. That could have gone. So I was waiting for that scene to actually do something with the setup, and it doesn't. It just becomes.
Well, Mark, oh, the movie's called Night Swim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgot. Yes,
it was a day party. They got away with it.
It was a daytime pool party.
And that's another issue, is that I don't know if everyone's familiar with the Patton Oswalt bit from the Werewolves and Lollipops album, 2007. The bit is called Deathbed, the bed that eats people. And it's about that being a real movie and how it's weird to, like, the issue is avoided if you just don't go to the bed and sleep in it.
Exactly.
And, like, that's kind of the issue with the pool, is like, don't go to the pool. To get out of the pool.
You don't even have to move out of a house here. It's because that was always the thing. Like, why don't you move out of the damn house? And when Insidious, which I don't like, but when the first Insidious,
another they movie say, this evokes,
we're going to move out.
I will say.
Yes, this one. Yep. Because it's another haunted house movie. But when they said we're going to move out of the house, I at least perked up in my seat, because how long have we been waiting for somebody to move out of the damn
house? We're going
to
drain the pool.
Drain the pool. And you've solved your problem, apparently. But. And let's talk about just the broad character stuff. Very broad character stuff.
Oh,
MS.
The trailer doesn't get at the trailer doesn't get at this movie being about a professional baseball player, MLB professional, who is sidelined because he is stricken with MS. So another moment that makes you go like, ah, these clever screenwriters, is they're like, how do we have motivation to get this guy into a house with a pool? And they're like, how about if he has MS and needs to have a pool for physical therapy reasons in the backyard? It's so like, whoop, you got to hand it to him. They asked them for a script about a haunted pool and they figured it out. They really tried.
And how do you feel? I feel like this is a monkey paw situation with Carrie Condon, who is a great actor, who was Oscar nominated for Banshees of Inisherin and should have won, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, she lost to Jamie Lee Curtis in Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I love Jamie Lee Curtis.
But I do too. Yep. Wasn't even the best supporting performance in that movie. Supporting 100%. Actress performance in that movie.
It's an interesting win.
Yeah, definitely an interesting win. Carrie Condon now can do something like this, and I'm glad she's doing this. And
she brings
like an emotional reality to this role, which is nice. Yeah. But I mean, she's good, and I want to see her more things. I want her though to have a nice sit down with her agent after this and say, you know what, maybe something with a little bit more challenge to it.
Please. You have to imagine the timing wasn't as simple as like, I got, you know, she got the Oscar nomination and she went and made this quick movie. I feel like that maybe it is. Sometimes these
I don't think this movie took that long to film.
Yeah, you're right. It could be. I hope it's that. And she just was like, you know, it's just such a funny follow-up January horror movie to an Oscar-winning performance. And she stars alongside Wyatt Russell, who is a Hollywood Nepo baby that society has allowed because he is talented, I think. I like him, too. And I felt bad for him by the end of this movie with what happens to him and stuff. It's like, but anyway, baseball player MS situation. What the most interesting stuff in this movie is like the family, the idea of sacrifice and family, and how this guy's a baseball player and his son is like bad at Little League and the dad is more interested in the kids who are good at Little League. And there's all these like interesting ideas. But again, this is the fucking haunted pool movie, and it's hard to take it seriously. And it really, even though the movie is dying to be taken seriously, when it should be having more fun, because I don't have anything, there's nothing to recommend about this. There's like no real scare sequences that deliver. Like the Marco Polo one comes closest, I guess, but like every single one is just ripping elements from other stuff you've seen. Like there's imagery that's like ripped from Get Out, which I feel like is also ripped from other stuff. Like when you sink into the whatever in Get Out, I feel like it's that same
didn't
imagery.
Get explained in this one. You sink into the deep end.
No, like, yeah, of course. It was just like a bunch of bullshit. But like, you know, I'll give the director some fun camera work stuff, like the breaststroke where the POV is like going from side to side. I enjoyed that.
I like I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the cheating at Marco Polo. So you have that fuzzy vision that just like you're looking out just like a little narrow.
I did enjoy that. All the murkiness of the water play where like you don't know if it's a person or just like the waves of the water. It's interesting. That stuff works, but it's not enough to make the movie work.
No, because what's it in favor of? Predictable jump scares and all those scenes in the pool just play out the same way over and over again with like maybe a couple of details changed or expanded upon. But you already know everything from that opening scene. It just, can we stop? I like the idea of the horror movie announcing itself at the beginning and letting a filmmaker show like, this is what I'm going to do. These are the rules I'm playing by. This is the style I'm going with. I like that idea, but can we stop with it for like a year? Can we just stop with that intro?
No, man, they need everything? To put out a cheap 10 million or less horror movie on the first week of January and like triple their money in a week and a half and then do it again next year. Come on, it's the model.
And in case it ends up on streaming, so people don't turn it off after the first 5 minutes, which, you know, can ruin the numbers. I guess that's part of it too now.
I had a really bad screening experience too, where it was supposed to be a press screening, but they clearly just let in a bunch of other people too. And the people behind us were just like the thickest, like Staten Island, New York accents, just like guessing the most obvious things. Like the scene would play. They're like the opening scene. They're like, oh, she's going to die. Oh, she's going to die right away.
Good job.
And I'm like, thank you so much. Like we all couldn't have figured that out on our own. It just continued the whole movie. But like, you know, this movie, it's January. I'm not going to make a scene. I dealt with it. But yeah, it was not a great movie, not a great experience. Don't you almost appreciate the family stuff though? Like it's almost compelling, but like, and then you realize it's in service of nothing and it's like,
okay. Yeah, it's not going anywhere, it's not doing anything, it's just setting up. It's frustrating because it's setting up some ideas. I did like the thing with the baseball, the kid, especially where it goes by the end, the kid who doesn't feel like he fits in and doesn't feel like he's as good as the rest of his family members, and what does that mean? It's kind of an interesting idea, but it also just comes out of nowhere and just playing into the backstory for the other, for what the character goes off to. I don't want to give away too much, even though it is it's a magical killer pool. That's all that it is. It's silly.
Like, does it help or does it haunt? That's a question.
Question.
I don't want to ruin every detail of this movie.
Why not both?
Mark used the word monkey paw earlier in a different context, and I think it works in other contexts maybe too.
Yeah.
It's disappointing. I usually like, you know, I like to give the, you know, January horror movies a pass, but this one really didn't work for me by the end. Like, pretty egregious, like third act and what the reveal is. And you know, another thing that bothered me that I haven't really thought about or talked about yet is how like kids drowning in pools at home in their backyards is like a thing that is like a crazy stat. Like it's too high. Like it happens all the time. I'm sure it's lessened over the years. Maybe it hasn't, I don't know. But like it happened to someone in the town that my cousin lived in growing up. And like that, you know, there's a park dedicated to him and shit like that. So like, I feel like it's a topic that you could make a really gripping horror movie about if you wanted to do it. I don't know. I don't know if that's even true. It feels like maybe you just don't want to tread with that. Like you could also just off limits topic, but like the movie doesn't treat, you know, do that subject it's due, you know what I mean?
I mean it doesn't, it's one of those, it
doesn't engage with that,
those,
really,
it's one of those iffy things, isn't it? Always like you don't kill off kids, you don't kill off of a family pet in a horror movie unless you really mean business, and this one tries to really mean business right up top.
And
it doesn't work because it is so lazy and it's so predictable and so formulaic that there's no real sense of dread or terror to it. It's just, it's a haunted pool. I don't know how many times I could say it's just a haunted pool. It should be more fun than this. It should be, should recognize how silly it is. It should do something with that concept that isn't just there's ghosts in and around the pool and that's about it. It's disappointing. It's mostly disappointing.
Yeah, I was hoping it could be fun, and it wasn't as fun as I had hoped. 2 stars for me. I'm being generous.
Okay, I'm giving it 1.5, and I'm also feeling kind of generous with that, which is weird.
But... yeah, my buddies, when I logged the 2 stars, a couple of them were like, that's very kind of you. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm interested in what... Again, I said I was almost impressed with the backstory they came up with the pool, which we haven't revealed yet. And again, the MS stroke of genius to get him therapy in the back of the pool. It's inspired or it isn't. I'm not sure. 2 stars. Let's move on to the next movie. It's a French film by, God, I'm going to butcher his name, Xavier Jeune. I know him as a horror filmmaker, like a new French extremity, super nasty horror movie called Frontiers. But I believe he's directed more mainstream work, like that fucking, isn't there a Hitman movie with like Tim Oliphant?
Yeah. He also directed the Stephen King adaptation of Cell.
Oh, that's really bad. Yeah.
That is bad.
I feel like Eli Roth was going to direct that for a while, and then it didn't happen. And then I guess this guy got it. But you know what? Frontiers is okay. Cold Skin is good. And this movie we're about to talk about, Mayhem. Let's see how we feel about it. Here's the trailer.
I'm asking for a simple favor. Get something for me and Lonnie. It's yours.
Get up. We gotta go.
I'm gonna find them.
You woke up the beast.
Locked in and I'm lethal.
Another one where you see the trailer and you get the gist. This is a very familiar movie, Mark, but it goes to show that like a little flair and like a good director can make what could be stale because you've seen a revenge movie like this before, but it's a slow burn. It's not like a quick action movie that's all action all the time. It does take time to set up this character so you feel for him, and then it lets loose on like the payback that he needs to get. And the violence is all really nasty and visceral the way it's shot. You like feel every punch and blow. The camera moves in crazy ways. It reminded me of The Raid, which is like high praised for me. I was very much impressed with this movie, despite it again feeling like, I mean, we knocked Night Swim for having tropes and stuff. This movie's full of tropes, but it shows that you can use tropes and still graft some fun onto it.
Yeah, that's the big difference here. Night Swim is formulaic and predictable and does exactly what you want to do without any real sense of style or fun. This one does everything you expect it to do with a strong sense of style and quite a bit of fun by the time all of that mayhem of the title gets unleashed.
The mayhem exclamation point. Yes.
Yeah, they added that exclamation point for a reason. And it has a really solid performance from Nassim Lies. I think he's done a lot of TV in France. I was looking up his credits because I'm like, where did this guy come from? So he's a former kickboxer, which is not surprising considering all the stunts and fighting that he does in this one.
Yeah, that does like a lot that.
Yeah, he did a lot of TV in France. He's done some supporting roles in French films. I think this might be like his first lead in a feature. And he's really good here.
He is.
He's solid as an action star once all that stuff comes up. But before that, he's giving a pretty solid performance as this guy who's released from prison. He just wants to go back to a normal life, get away from the life of crime that he was in. But obviously, because it's a revenge thriller, the life of crime comes back to him, pulls him back in. He has to flee France for Thailand, start over a new life there, and then the life of crime that's going on, everything that's going on in Thailand catches up with him, and he's got to fight his way out of another situation and get revenge for, you know, people ruining his family and ruining his life. He's good. And I think that goes a long way here because it is pretty standard stuff. It's just, we watch this guy who's decent at heart try to make things better, and it all collapses for reasons that aren't his fault. And then, yeah, the last hour 40 minutes or so is just him going to different places and beating up people in extremely brutal and somewhat, you know, clever ways. I was not expecting a lot of the things that happen here to happen. I don't want to give away. It feels like more of a spoiler territory to give away the specific things that happen in these fights, because
sure, because they're joyful to experience.
There's so many things going on in them. There's like, I don't even want to talk about. There's an elevator fight. We've seen an elevator fight before.
Yeah,
I haven't seen an elevator fight that really incorporates just the enclosed space and what that means. If, for example, somebody pulls out a blade and that blade gets stuck somewhere, how do you still use the blade to attack somebody? Like, that's the kind of thing that is kind of ingenious when you think about it. And it's really gross to watch, but you can't stop watching it because it's such an ingenious idea to use a blade in that way with the leverage added and add all the, there's just a lot going on in the action sequences, and they're bloody and they're brutal, but they are kind of funny and also, you know, smartly incorporates all of that violence and gore. That's where I'm going to leave it here, because it does feel like we're going to get into spoiler. The weirdest spoiler territory you can have is, how do people have their limbs broken?
Yeah, we don't want to ruin the blows to the head people take or whatever. You know, I enjoyed this because it's a horror guy doing action, so it's nasty, it's gory, brutal, painful, typical revenge movie. With the Raid style fight choreography, maximum impact, good time. I was like, word associating here. 3 stars for Mayhem.
Yeah, 3 stars for me too. I think I can bring up, though, the way that he uses the camera to follow those fights. It's not just like quick cuts and everything. You do follow
It's and all he long.
He uses the camera to punctuate those blows too at times, like when the guy gets hit and goes through a wall, and the camera follows him all the way through it.
Yeah.
It just the way that the Gens uses the camera to actually highlight it all. That's also important here. Yeah, it works. I give it 3 stars.
The first thing I wrote down is camera follows along. It hurts. That's the word. That's what I wrote down. Great direction. I said, they hurt somehow. Hurt, great direction. I love when my notes are evocative and helpful. I had this in a different order when I told you, but let's make an audible to switch to the painter next, because they complement each other well. It's another case of, this is such a stock premise that is injected with some lunacy, but not enough. And it's such an interesting case study to watch all these similar movies back to back. And especially because I've seen one for next week, too, that is very similar, that may star Jason Statham. And it's fun to talk about all of them in such quick succession. I'm trying to remember which weird shotgun kills happened in which movie, because there are several in all of them. All right, here's the painter.
Peter Barrett.
Excuse me?
My name is Sophia. And my mom called you Peter.
Biometric watch.
Contains a hard drive with sole access to his contacts, stolen intel, and we want it all back.
She wanted you to find someone named Peter. My name's Mark. I wish I could be more help.
You were CIA like my mom, right? You're a really good painter.
Oh, hey, kid, stop. Those are private.
Sir, this is my mom. So you do know her.
Go upstairs. Last door on the left's the bathroom. Lock the door and get in the tub.
Get under the bed, you're going to be taken. That's the new version of that right there. What did he say? Get in the tub?
Get in the tub.
Close the door, get in the tub. Drop the taco, get in the car. That's what Brie Larson said in a car commercial, if anyone remembers that. Anyway. The painter. Okay, Mark. There is some batshit crazy developments that happen in this movie. I would say the biggest one happens way too late. And the movie is the problem that it's just too direct to video, cheap and bad and not very good, and all, you know, really bad exposition dumps that explain everything. It's too bad your parents died in a terrorist attack. Cut to the terrorist attack. It's too bad you survived and had a, you know, a horrible hearing injury that we have now turned into a weapon. So this guy who is the star of this movie, who's the painter, very literal, he just paints because it's his trauma response. He's painting like George W. Bush after the wars. Now I'm grafting that political read onto this movie. I'm just kidding.
It's because John Voight's in it. That's why.
Yeah, John Voight is in this movie. That is the like guy on the poster that's selling this thing. Because who the fuck is the lead, right? I have no idea who this guy is. But the movie is so bananas in an inspired way. In its setup with that, I mean, the guy is basically superhuman. They treat him like an X-Men. Like a guy walks in the room like 10 feet away and he hears it. And they shoot it like, you know, what's like Guy Ritchie shot, you know, Sherlock Holmes or something. Is that a good comparison? Like you can really like, it's like super vision or super hearing vision or whatever you want to call it. That it's basically makes him superhuman. And they use that kernel of an idea later in a crazier way. And I wish the movie were actually about that instead of just gesturing at it. It just goes, hey, by the way, this is what's going on over here. Isn't it fucking crazy? And then it goes back to being a pretty boring, stale movie that has like barely competent action scenes. Like they're fine, but they pale in comparison to what we're used to after, you know, John Wick and stuff that's well choreographed. So like, I'm almost like, oh, I'm like, this is almost fun. But it isn't, right? It's still not very good.
It's not. It's the exposition.
You see what I'm talking about, though?
The first 20 minutes of this are very rough to take because it's the guy, Charlie Weber, is the actor. He's okay here. I have seen much worse no-name actors in direct-to-video style action movies like this. I have seen a lot worse. He's decent. He's great by comparison to some of the other performances that I've seen in this kind of material.
Sure. Yeah.
So he's fine. And then John Voight, and they're just talking back and forth, explaining things these two characters already know. Like, hey, I'm your adopted father. Yeah, isn't that interesting?
That's the terrorist attack thing. It's so funny.
It is interesting, Dad. And you're also my boss, so you better give me an assignment. Oh, yeah, I am your boss. I better give you an assignment. By the way, your pregnant wife, how's she doing?
it's incredible.
You know all this. You two know this. You know this. You have first-hand experience with all of this. Why are you explaining it to each other? It's because we're there, too. That's frustrating and rough and really uncomfortable. But you get to a point, there is some ludicrous stuff that happens later on involving the superpowers and a CIA conspiracy.
It's like an X-Men shit,
It is. It's setting up, it seems to be setting up a series of movies, which is too bad. It's just too bad because I think its better ideas do come near the end. And it's frustrating that it feels as if we're going to have to wait for a sequel that, because it's such a low budget movie, will probably happen, but we may or may not be able to see it just because who knows if we're going to care at that point by the time it comes around. And maybe that one will be a direct video. This does have like a very limited theatrical release.
Yeah. I'm still out to see on what that is. Cause it's not, doesn't seem to be flying near me.
I found it at certain place. I could not tell you for the life of me. I did look it up after the fact.
Yeah.
After
but it's like
it,
out
just to make sure.
Oh yeah. It's out today in theaters of the day this episode comes out, Friday the 5th, and then it's on VOD on like Tuesday or something. Like it's an interesting release strategy.
Yeah, it's a Paramount, one of those Paramount pseudo limited, pseudo day and date release. They have a couple of those that sometimes this isn't terrible. It does have, it's not you, I have taken on your whole, you know, shooting for coverage thing. I actually made a direct reference to that in my last graph of this review.
I've made an impact.
You did make an impact. They are actually shooting for atmosphere and for mood in this, and not just for coverage. There's a scene.
I noted that too. Yes.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff like the mist in the abandoned warehouse. The abandoned warehouse, obviously being a favorite locale.
They're trying.
There's all the laser sights that are going on. Mm-hmm. I think the action is decent. It's cut too quickly. They're clearly doing John Wick style gung-fu, it doesn't work because it's cut too quickly, so you can't see all the choreography that's happening.
Yeah,
I laughed out loud, and for a while when he's attacked in his cabin by masked men who don't want their identity to be known. But the only thing they did to hide their identity was put a Velcro strap over CIA on their suits.
Yeah, that was good.
I was in tears from laughter.
There are moments that I think it is doing that for laughs, and I wish it leaned into that way more. The guy that like replaced him as the intern or whatever, the like secret program, whatever it is, he is, you know, walking around talking about, you know, I thought the painter was a metaphor, like he killed so well, it was like a work of art, but no, he's just a literal painter. So at those moments, I'm like, this movie's self-aware and making jokes about like this whole, I don't even know what to call it. Is it a subgenre? Like, we have so many movies that we joke about this, like the accountant, the baker, the painter now, like these like stock generic action movies that are, it's almost always like the title's what, a cover or a code name or something. It just feels like it's a stock thing, but
it does, because this guy could have had a dozen other nicknames that would have been more appropriate to describe what he actually does instead of the painter, because he paints on the side.
It has nothing to do with his, like, no. It's so funny that the movie doesn't call any attention to like the crazy stuff, like, oh yeah, he has super hearing and is basically an X-Men character. They just don't really talk about it, but it does complement the action scenes. God, I wish I could tell you guys the big twist that made me like scream, that made me want to like this movie. But, you know, I can't in good conscience recommend it. It's not very good, but it's like a couple, like one rewrite away from being good, I think. That's why I'll be generous with my 2 stars for The Painter.
Yeah, I'm giving it 1.5. And, you know, if they make a sequel and it's actually going to have a theatrical release of some kind, I'll check it out. But I'm curious where it will go from here, just because it does have all of its best ideas on the back end and what they're going to do potentially with that setup. It's like, why don't you give those to us up front? That could have made a decent movie instead of
probably cost
us
too much money to do what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Most people involved, I guess.
That's a good point. Why do you have 20 minutes of setup for stuff that becomes irrelevant after that 20 minutes is up?
Yeah.
And then, anyway.
So how many are 1.5? Is that right?
Yeah, 1.5 for me.
All right.
2 for you, man. I'm surprised by that.
I'm telling you, I think it's like halfway between what I want, which again, we'll address this next week when we talk about a Jason Statham movie that delivered on silly garbage that I want to see. This movie was like halfway to that point and not quite there. It's funny that there are so many similar movies. All right. Here is the trailer for this movie. Really does not exist. Classic Tribeca debut that gets farted out in January and has no, I don't know where this is playing either. But apparently it's theatrical and then VOD next week, I guess. He Went That Way, starring Jacob Elordi and Zachary Quinto. Not sure how you're supposed to say that. I can't be bothered to look these things up. Come on. Here's the trailer for He Went That Way.
You guys keep asking about the 5 guys that I killed. Why don't you ask me about the one that I let live?
Do you need a ride? I'm going east on 66. I'm Jim.
I'm Bobby.
Can I ask you a question?
Roaming, that's all.
Just gonna ask, right?
Experiencing America. Plenty of room out here to do some damage, huh, Jim?
What the hell is that?
Hey, it's Bobby. He's our friend. You want to say hi? Hey, Spanky.
Wait, did you say Spanky?
I've seen everything he ever did.
Ed Sullivan, Perry Como, Today Show.
The network canceled Spanky's contract, so I'm having a real hard time getting us jobs.
This is just your typical everyday movie about a serial killer on a road trip with the animal trainer handler of a celebrity chimpanzee that is very clearly played by a child in a Halloween chimpanzee mask. It's just one of those.
I'm so glad I didn't see the trailer for this beforehand. Because
did you enjoy that?
That is a weird way to sell this movie. It's very direct. I will give them that. It is very direct about what the movie is and what it's doing. But it was much better watching it and having it kind of
elude you
a little with a little delay before the chimpanzee reveal it. Ghost.
Yeah, oh. strange movie.
Based on a true story, which is shocking, if mm-hmm. only because this should be a lot more interesting with yes. all of those components and it being a true story that apparently was adapted into a nonfiction novel by some author and then now transmogrified into this movie through the perspective of the actual guy who was yeah. held captive by the serial killer.
There's like a 2-minute clip in the end with like the real person that's way more interesting than the movie.
Yeah. I don't like, I mean, were they so unsure of what to do with this? So they couldn't just talk to the guy and do a dramatic recreation?
You know why? Because not every interesting real life event deserves to be a movie. Like the way this movie strains to be about something just kept making me laugh. Like it's like it's 1960 whatever, the times are changing, and it's like the newspaper headlines are like society is like this now. It was just so blatantly trying to be like the time, like trying to say something about the era and the people in it, and it doesn't have anything to say.
Yeah,
and
that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, it has nothing to say. So like it's just like kind of transcribing a thing that happened. Like wasn't it weird that this guy drove a serial killer around? And it's hard to sympathize with either character, right? Because one's a killer and they make it clear that he has murdered people and stuff. And then the other guy, he just doesn't react like a human being in my read. Like, I just didn't believe anything he did or the way he acted towards this guy. But apparently it's one of those things where it's like, well, the truth is stranger than fiction, so I have to believe it if they say it's true. But it doesn't make it compelling or interesting.
It's kind of compelling. If you dig in a bit, that it's about Quinto's character wanting to believe in the best of people and really wanting this guy, this hitchhiker that he picks up, to be a better person than he seems to be. And
yeah,
to
it's a completely clever
always
idea.
Be proven wrong. It's that yeah. that part of it is somewhat interesting. And then to have that same character, he's having problems with his brother-in-law, so he brings the very violent man with a pistol to the brother-in-law's yeah. trailer. It's like, well, what does that say about this guy? Yeah. I don't know what it says about him. I don't know what it says about either of these characters, except that very broad stroke of one believes in the decency of people, and the other one is a serial killer who doesn't have any sense of decency. And it doesn't pay off in the end, because the serial killer is obviously the more interesting character, because Elordi's going to be a movie star if he isn't already. And this kind of
he's
going to be, if we have movie stars anymore, he's going to be the next generation of movie stars that we have. He's really charismatic here, playing this drifter who, you know, just is going around and killing people, but you know, doing it with, you know, flair and with the sense of humor about him. And he's a despicable person, but Elordi makes him compelling. Because the screenwriters forgot to make the character compelling in any other way. That's yeah. the problem. It's like, we want to understand more about this guy. We don't understand anything about him except that he kills people. We know too much about the Quinto character in terms of, from my perspective, from his belief about who people are and what they can do. And the two don't play off each other well. Those two characters don't add up to an idea.
I feel like they're gesturing almost at teasing queer subtext between the two of them, and they don't actually ever do it, which also, I don't know if I was reading too much into that, but it seems like they were presenting it a little bit. It seems like a confused movie, but the ideas you're talking about how he wants to see the good in people, that's interesting, but it's like clumsy the way they go about it, where they're like, was it the monkeys are 99% like humans and there's 1% difference you got to worry about, and how he's applying that logic to this killer person. Like, I want to say that's a good idea or a good enough idea to write a movie around, but it's just kind of like a clever thing. And then you're left just watching this boring, listless movie that doesn't really say anything about the state of the world or much at all.
Yeah, I think I'm correct in thinking that the Quinto character doesn't know he's an actual murderer, right? He just thinks he's a violent drifter who robs people at gunpoint when he's...
He wasn't believable human, but like, I guess...
It's not fair
because the movie's just presenting us with different... Like, we know what he doesn't, because the movie's showing us his murders and then cutting back. And, you know, it's just kind of clumsy filmmaking, because then you know, it's hard to sympathize, even though the character doesn't.
It's very hard. If this were more of a straightforward thriller about this guy who thinks he has like a control on his life and clearly doesn't, trying to control this other animal, basically, and not being able to, that would have been interesting. If it were more of a thriller where we know more than the character does, that might have paid off. It might have worked in some way. But because it's trying to add all these ideas, and I don't think it has a clear idea where it wants to go with them or what it really wants to say about them. Because don't forget, the whole movie ends with a punchline that comes out of nowhere about chimpanzees and typewriters. And that's like, that's a throwaway joke. And it's the final point you're making with your movie before the credits roll.
Yeah, because again, nothing to say.
Yep.
But I have a fun fact, which is the chimp is played, I was right, it's a child in a mask, obviously. But it's not just any child. It is someone named Phoenix Notary, which is a name that sparked, you know, a bulb in my head, because someone named Terry Notary is like famously the motion capture guy, the movement coach, and the guy who plays monkeys in a lot of movies. Planet of the Apes, the Burton, Planet of the Apes Now. He was the ape guy in the movie The Square, the Ruben Östlund, The Square. So that guy, basically the Andy Serkis of monkeys, specifically, his daughter is the monkey in this monkey movie. And Terry Notary was the movement coach. So he's got a family monkey business, which is interesting. That's the most interesting thing about this movie, in my opinion. 1.5 for He Went That Way.
I'm giving it 2. I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to rate this one a little bit higher. I think the performances are fine.
They are good. Delordi's good. Quinto's good.
Yeah. It's
I just didn't buy the character, I guess.
It's an intriguing story that probably didn't need all that extra stuff. It just needed to be a straightforward thriller. It might have worked that way. It's just adding too many layers upon all the way this very thin thing.
The way it's cut together with the structure doesn't work for it at all. Like the cutting back and us seeing the murders and shit. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. And it's nothing like, I'll bring up California with Brad Pitt, David Duchovny, and Julia Lewis. That's a great movie about road trip with a serial killer.
Yeah.
That's worth checking out if you find the idea interesting.
California with a K. Am I right?
With a K. Yes. Yeah. Make sure you get that one right. Yes. California with a K.
It's probably some other shitty movie called California.
Probably.
All right. That was the first week of new releases on Roger and Me. Check markreviewsmovies.com for 2 more. Rate and review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You may think in the new year that we'd have a new lease on life, or at least a new lease on closing music. You'd be wrong. Take it away. I wish I knew the guy's name who was in the band. Mr. Alien Ant Farm, take it away.
The show starts in 1.
Emotion, we seem Dragonzar, shut up. Ush.
Just fly.